Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's great to have you all back joining us. We have a part two of a two-part episode this week with our return of Rhea Cuffler. She is going to continue her discussion with us about her efforts to work as a nursing student in war-torn areas of the world, specifically in and around Syria, helping with medical care for the refugee population there. And we also have on this call Dr. Joe Holly, Sam Bradley, and of course our weather expert Kyle Nelson as well. And we will jump right in to our remaining segment, the second half of this episode with Rhea Cuffler. Again, if you haven't heard the first half, I urge you to go back. This is one of the best episodes we've ever recorded. We just sat and chatted with Rhea and really got into the weeds, learning about what she was dealing with when she was in these conflict zones and how that relates to the types of things we might see in our disaster responses. So without further ado, here's the rest of that segment with Rhea and the rest of the gang here at the Disaster Podcast.
So one basic question, and you kind of answered it for me, but I love the first-person perspectives, and even within my own team, there's always the question. It's like, we're Katrina, worst case scenario, but people were itching to go back. What is it that drives you to want to keep doing this kind of work?
You know, honestly, I think for me, it's the basic feeling of there's nothing more important to a person when they've lost everything than their health, you know, and I have moments, you know, I was in clinical today, I had clinical yesterday, and, you know, I had great patients. I mean, they were fantastic, but when you look at them, sometimes it's hard to be like, okay, so I'm going to spend my 12 hours today working with you on the fact that you do not like to take your insulin and you have diabetes. So, you know, I spend my 12 hours educating, you know, doing interventions, whatever. When you're in a situation like a war or a conflict or somewhere where people, you know, literally they've lost, you know, a natural disaster, whatever the case may be, these people are so desperate for anything that you can give them that's going to make them feel the tiniest bit of relief. And so that's where I feel like my skills are really the, not the most appreciated, but the most valuable. So for me, if, you know, hopefully I never burn out, but I would love, you know, to keep doing that. And I, you know, to me, in the big scheme of things, I'd like to take it a step further and kind of start working on kind of a larger way things are done for patients in conflict or natural disaster or war zones, and establishing kind of basic standards for what healthcare should look like. Because right now it's kind of make it up as you go. And so if we can figure out procedures and protocols, you know, where whether it's a government or NGOs kind of directly respond, you know, I know Doctors Without Borders does stuff like this, but they're very specific about the conflicts they choose and so on and so forth. And I think you really have to take all of the politics and the conflicts and whatever out of it and really just care about the people. Because, you know, regardless of what country, what politician we like, what religion we are, we're all people. And when you're in those situations, people are so thankful for anything that you have. So it's really, you know, I always say, you know, as much as I gave them, they gave me so much more. And so if I can keep being fed that way, I think that's a beautiful life, you know.
Well, in a couple of years, we want to see a book from you on the very unique topic. No, I'm quite serious, because this is such a unique topic. And when it comes from your heart and it comes from your soul and, you know, you're giving to these people and you're leaving some of yourself there, it's hard for people to understand that and why you keep going back and doing it again. But I see you continuing to do that. I would love to stay in touch with you and see how your career develops, especially in this area. And you have a very unique, well, and like you were saying, you want to help create protocols and perspectives. It would be, I would be all over reading a book about, you know, how you started and how you, you know, what you saw of value along the way and other contributions you can make when you're not physically there. I just think that's great. And Jamie, as a writer, would you agree? Would you read that book?
I'd read it in a heartbeat, and we'd have her back on the show, as a matter of fact, to talk about it, because I think it would be just a wonderful thing to promote and get out there. Just, Rhea, this is a unique story, and we've been doing this show for a long time and talked about a lot of different types of disasters and austere situations, and this is the first time we've had this kind of perspective from someone.
Well, I'm glad to have been provided. And, you know, I really, a lot of people, you know, if I leave anything for the podcast, a lot of people ask me, well, okay, they hear it and they say, well, how can I get involved? And I think it's fantastic that people want to jump and get involved. But I think it's very important to realize what it is you're getting involved in. And I know
Jamie
and I have talked about this. Yeah, we've talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, it's so important to be able to really grasp what is going on and what you're going to be put into when you do deploy. And I know even, you know, working in search and rescue, and I'm sure Dr. Joe and Sam, you can relate. Sometimes you have people that deploy with you and then they become the patient. You know,
like, oh, yes. And that's a huge detriment. But it's interesting, in talking about a book, we actually have a guest that's going to be coming on who wrote a book in general about international deployments and preparing yourself mentally and physically for those kinds of things. So he's in the right arena, so stay tuned for that. But Jamie, I think you had a question, and then I want to throw it to Joe, because unfortunately we can't text him to see if he's dying to say something out there.
Yeah, just, Rhea, you know, you talked a little bit about what you'd aspire to do. Why don't you go into a little more detail? Because I think it's pretty fascinating. I mean, you and I have already talked about this on the other podcast, but for the Disaster Podcast listeners, you know, we talk a lot about advancing our educations and moving forward in our careers. And I think your goals and the things you aspire to are pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like every day there's a new pathway that kind of I start looking into, because there's no textbook, you know, kind of career path for this. Like, there's no flow chart, there's nothing. So I've kind of been toying with a lot of ideas. I'd love to work with an NGO kind of professionally, whether it be the UN High Commission for Refugees or the World Health Organization, or, you know, it could even be locally with, like, the CDC's disaster preparedness kind of branch. Recently, I've even been looking into the U.S. Navy Nurse Corps, because they do a lot of these humanitarian missions on the USS Comfort and the USS Mercy. And so I've kind of been toying with how to get more experience in conflict zones, because I think, you know, even as healthcare providers, and I know nurses, Jamie, I'm sure you can back me up on this. Everybody tells new grads, you need to get your 2 years of med surg, and then you can specialize and do whatever you want.
Yeah, but so that's not as true as it used to be. I can tell you that from experience. There's a lot of people just going right into their specialties.
Yeah, so for my kind of dreams and goals, it's kind of getting more of that experience in the conflict zones. In order to build upon that, to be able to understand procedures and protocols. Because if I don't have the big picture of, you know, not only conflict zones for the Syrian war, but, you know, there's a conflict in Yemen happening where also healthcare and humanitarian aid are being blocked. There's conflicts in Africa and so on and so forth. So being able to see how this relates to different populations, I think, is extremely important, because you can't, you know, use one example and create something for a general issue. So however I figure out how to do that, and if anybody has career advice, I greatly appreciate it.
Well, it sounds like you're definitely going to forge your own path and do some awfully great things out there. I have a very strong feeling about that. Dr. Joe, what do you think about her and the book she's going to write? Maybe you can help her with it.
I'll look forward to reading it. I guess a couple of thoughts. First of all, I commend you very highly for your amazing level of insight into some real issues that are part of the disaster response world, and one that remains challenging and fairly obscure and certainly not well recognized by a lot of folks. So I think as you do continue along what certainly sounds like a very amazing career path, I would encourage you to use your, again, really amazing insight into those issues as part of the protocols and stuff you're talking about developing, not only how you can help others and maximize that, but really protocols around taking care of the caregivers. I just think we have not done as good a job with that as we should have, and we continue to be plagued by, crazy thoughts and concerns and issues around what's truly a mental health issue, not only for, those victims of the disaster itself, but those trying to provide care for them.
Absolutely. I think that's such a great point, honest. And I mean, we even struggle with this in the United States with veterans, kind of, bringing them back into civilian life. And we see kind of a disconnect between caring for them as active duty and then, or reserves or whatever it is, and then kind of caring for them once they come out of that situation. So I think in general, as a society, we kind of struggle with this, responder to civilian transition.
Oh, absolutely. And on that note, Rhea, so I'm a 20-year-old nursing student who happens to find out what you do. And, oh, my God, that sounds so cool. I want to do that. And you probably have a good idea. This person has no clue what they're getting into other than the fact it sounds exciting and sexy and whatever else. So what would your first words be? What would your basic advice be to, assuming this person is actually serious about this, how would you lead them to prepare themselves to even decide if this is something they can really do?
So this is something I really struggle with, because especially in nursing programs, I'm not sure about medical programs, but I know in nursing programs, this kind of like volunteerism, global health mission trip has become a very popular kind of, it's almost like tourism, so you go to a disparaged country and take care of a disparaged community and you spend 2 weeks there and you come back. Right. So I think understanding one that you're expensive to them in the terms that sometimes you can cause more harm than you do good. So being very aware of your impact on a community is very important. And for any issue you want to get involved in, whether it's another culture that you want to provide care for, a disparaged community, refugees, whatever it is, we have the opportunity in the United States to get involved locally always. So before I went to the Middle East, I worked with Syrian refugees in Columbus. Even though I'm, I understand Arab culture, it was very important to me to understand people in more privileged situations who had been able to flee from this war, being able to for them to tell me, this is what my situation was like. This is what the war felt like. And this is what it felt like when I left. And all of those people have friends and family that are still there or in refugee camps or whatever it is. So just even if you didn't give them care, being able to have those conversations with them, I think is the best introduction you can have to the issue, because it's firsthand account, it's their narrative, you get kind of the personal humanitarian view of the situation. The next thing I think that's really important is picking what NGO you're going with. I know there's a lot of NGOs that do go, but it's not necessarily a good situation. And being very aware, talking to people who have been part of the program. And then, of course, and this is kind of what we've been talking about for a while, is that self-awareness of, can I handle somewhere where I don't know what my day is going to be like? I'm not going to be able to, even small things, like I'm not going to be able to call home. Like I can't call my parents while I'm there because that phone call might be tracked. Do your parents support you? This is huge. Is your family on board with this? It's when you go into situations like this, it's so paramount that even if your family is uncomfortable with it, that they are still there supporting you, because you don't want to go into a situation, especially a high risk situation, where your family is extremely against it. That's, you're not doing any favors to anybody, yourself, your family, or the population you're serving. So really kind of examining all the aspects before you go, whether, and doing a lot of research. Like, you have to do a lot of research. Be on, I check the news all the time. I need to know. Every time there's an explosion, I get an alert on my phone. Am I okay losing somebody? You know, am I okay with the fact that I might not come home? These are like, they're very crude questions, and they require a lot of honesty and blatant honesty with yourself. But you can't go and expect that your safety is going to be guaranteed, because that just doesn't exist. So I think, and honestly, even though I did it as a nursing student, I really think sometimes it's still better to do it as a nurse, because you have, or a doctor, or, you know, someone that's already licensed and has the full range of their skills. Because there were a lot of moments where I was put in situations where I was asked to do things that I wasn't comfortable with, and I was really scared I was going to do more harm than good. And that was also very difficult on me, because I had self-doubt all the time. So, you know, and you can't, it's not clinical. You can't have your instructor sit there and walk you through the steps of the procedure. So it's a very difficult thing. It's a very personal decision to make. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did. And you also brought up some other really good points. And, you know, as someone who is learning, when you're out there as a practitioner, you're going to have all that experience with you. So I think there, yeah, you know, as much as maybe you would have thought doing it differently, you then can go out and help other people who may be new to it, that have their license but don't really know much about disaster care. I kind of want to run this thought by the group here. And Dr. Joe, you've been doing this for a long time. What would you add to that basic advice to someone who wants to be not only a disaster responder but an international responder who might potentially be involved as close in a war situation like Ray is discussing?
Well, I think Rhea hit on a lot of it. I mean, it's all those issues around uncertainty, and it sounds really glamorous, but it's really not so glamorous. It's just a lot of really hard work and really difficult circumstances. And I think on top of the stress of the situation itself has got to be concerns over cultural differences that, you know, could inadvertently put you in a uncomfortable or dangerous situation. Rhea clearly is very comfortable in that environment and knows that culture very well. But I would say for a lot of folks that have had no experience or exposure there, they need to educate themselves aggressively on the culture of the area that they're hoping to serve in.
Really good points, Joe. There's just so much to know. What are your thoughts, Kyle?
Well, going forward with this, I think it's important, though, to kind of circle back to a point that Raya made, is that it's something I say several times on the podcast about natural disasters, but it totally applies to technological disasters, humanitarian disasters and such, is not forgetting the humanity behind them. Because we, you know, on the news and things, we always get kind of that 20,000-foot view. But for, you know, to have the opportunity to talk with survivors and share the stories like you've done tonight, you know, from both those impacted and those providing care, it's important because you bring life to the story. And that's something that not many people have the opportunity to do. And if I may, it's on a personal note, it's really exciting for me to hear from someone who is so passionate and driven in forging their own path. And I would encourage you, never stop letting your wonder direct your thinking.
Thank you. Write that down, Jamie. I like that. Put that in the show notes.
I'm typing madly. Somebody else ask a question.
But I appreciate, everything you're talking about. We could do a whole, I thought of 10 different topics we could do, you know, a whole show about. But I think getting into this, I think the basics of it is I I shouldn't want to do this because of what it will bring me. I shouldn't want to do this because it sounds exciting. I shouldn't want to do this because I can come back and tell my friend, my friends how wonderful I was to help these poor people. You have to be in the right headspace, and obviously you are. So I just wanted to throw that point out. Like Joe said, it's tough work. It is dirty, and you don't sleep well if you sleep at all, and let's not even talk about MREs. So what are your thoughts on that?
That enough. No, like, I think it's amazing. Like, I feel very humbled by the fact that people have taken interest in what I've done. You know, whether it be, you know, Johnson & Johnson and Jamie and this, you know, the Disaster Podcast, I think it's very humbling for me because I never left thinking I'm going to be writing articles about this or I'm going to be that wasn't a thought process that I ever had. And something that was very real about it is, you know, people see TV shows. I don't know if it's TV shows or what it is, but there's this like sexy adrenaline about, you know, war and healthcare. And I think Grey's Anatomy is partly to blame, you know, with all their disasters they've had on their shows and the responders. And it's like this very like cool, gritty look that they have about them. But like you spend more time being kind of stressed out and afraid than you do really thinking like, yeah, I'm kind of a cool guy here helping, you know, saving these people. And you make some of the worst decisions in your life. You come back. I mean, I think I came back a better person, but I think I also came back and there are traumas that I've experienced that will never not be a part of me. And they'll always kind of, I don't like to say that we come back damaged, but we come back changed. And some of those changes aren't necessarily fun, exciting, sexy, adrenaline ones, you know?
Yes.
So I think that especially for younger people who, you know, have this exciting, adventurous kind of ideology about it, it's, you know, understanding that you're going to come back with battle scars that aren't physical, they're psychological, and they're much harder to deal with than a physical battle scar. So, you know, like I said, one of my teams, we had somebody like die in an explosion, and that trauma, that's not something you ever forget. It's very real, and it's the very ugly, you know, you deal with the ugliest side of humanity, which is war, and then you deal with the most vulnerable, fragile side of humanity, which is victims of war. And it's a very messy mix, but it's, you know, you come back with such reality, you know, in your heart. It's very hard to be a normal human, you know, especially in America where we're extremely privileged and we're extremely safe and we have an abundance of food and all these, they have that joke, first world problems, you know, and it doesn't become more real than when you come back from a war zone. You're like, yeah, I'm not really sure why you're upset about your, you know, we had like lights out because of there was a power outage somewhere and people were like, oh my gosh, how am I going to charge my phone? I'm like, yeah, that's
how am I going to polish my nails?
Yeah.
Well, one last question, and it's something that we always talk about at some point in the show because it's a really important factor for us, it sounds like you kind of had the OJT, a little on-the-job training. There wasn't any real formal training process, especially when you're engaged with different people and different teams, and they may not be like our federal teams that mandate certain training and so forth. So
right.
What was that like for you? Just learning what you needed to know.
So I came in kind of, I think, a little bit ahead of the game, but also behind the game. So as I mentioned, like, I went in as a nursing student, which means that I didn't have a full range of skills as a healthcare provider. You know, there were a lot of things I had read about in books, but I hadn't really done on human beings. I'd done in, like, simulations, but I hadn't, you know, really understood what it was like. And then also I came with a disaster background. So I had had formal trainings of, you know, survival and, incident command and FEMA training. And so, you know, like I kind of had a framework of disaster. I also had like my mom, so she's Lebanese and, during her lifetime, there was a war and that kind of forced her family to kind of, my mom, like her family was extremely privileged. And I think what people don't really realize, and I always forget to mention this, is, you know, the refugees that you take care of, those are usually the poorest people of that country, because the privileged ones have the ability to flee, you know, whether it be to Europe, whether it be to, you know, the United States or the West, wherever, they can flee somewhere safe. So the people that kind of get left behind are the ones that didn't have that privilege. But my mom's experience with war was very helpful to me, because she, anything that I kind of experienced, even though I was going at it from a different angle, because I ran towards a war and she ran away from a war, but she was able to kind of give me a frame for that experience. So, you know, and keeping in mind that you are so privileged in this situation, you know, you have a security detail, you can extract whenever you feel it's too much. The people you leave behind, they don't have any other options but being there. So that was also very important for me to keep in mind with my situation and not feel like, oh, it's the end of the world, and so on. But so I think for me, I came in with skills. And I think, you know, like Dr. Joe mentioned, and like you mentioned as well, it's, I think, honestly, one thing I'd recommend to people if they wanted to do stuff like this is do disaster training, you know. And the U.S. government is pretty good at this. You know, the FEMA courses are, I think they're free. And, you know, the Red Cross does disaster trainings. There's a lot of resources that you can use to kind of understand what disaster is. They did, the teams that I worked with did have what they called kind of a training. I also do sexual assault rescue stuff, where I talk to victims in hospitals in the United States. And so it was a similar training to that, where they had kind of refugees talk to you and healthcare providers that had been on teams before talk to you about their experience. But they expect you to come with the skills. So, you know, the same way you only have a certain amount of resources like medication, equipment, whatever, they only have a certain amount of resources as how many people they can have on that team. So you're kind of, you know, you need to have as much skill as you can have, because otherwise you're more of a hindrance than a help. So I think that's an important point to make, but yeah.
No, it's a very, really awesome point. And, you know, we always try to talk about training at the end of the episode, because Dr. Joe's company, Paragon Medical Education Group, is the sponsor for the show. And they do disaster, experientially based disaster training. So it's not just PowerPoints and discussions, but they actually come into organizations, to jurisdictions, and do this kind of thing. And Joe, you know, we haven't talked a lot. We talked about disasters and active shooter situations and all these things, but a war zone takes active shooter and makes it look like, you know, kids playing marbles.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this whole conversation, you know, has given me a whole new idea for a couple of different disaster scenarios. One is, you know, the war zone kind of concept, as well as really focusing on the psychological and stressor and, you know, physiological aspects of disaster response.
So, Joe, if people want to find out, you know, maybe you're going to get those classes together and start offering them, where can they find out how to find all of the things that Paragon Medical Education Group offers for an organization or a jurisdiction or a company?
Sure. Well, we do offer that kind of training and many others, as you know. You can find us on the web at ParagonMedicalEducationGroup.com. We have a Facebook page, Paragon Medical Education Group, as well. You can always reach us through the Disaster Podcast or the Facebook page for the Disaster Podcast.
Excellent. And again, we just want to thank you on behalf of the audience and all of us that, you know, for continuing to sponsor the show, making it possible for us to bring this program out every single week. It's really important. I think especially this episode highlights that how important this kind of work is to get the word out about it. So thank you, Joe. Kyle, how about you? Where can folks find you?
Well, Jamie, I'm out on all the social medias under the handle WX Kyle Nelson. So feel free to add me, link me, follow me, friend me, and continue the conversation online.
Excellent. Rhea, you know, I don't know if you have or would be willing to offer a way to contact you or reach out to you, or if you want to join our Disaster Podcast Facebook group, you can look that up, search for it, and we'll add you to the group, and then people can ask questions there when this episode gets posted. Is there something you'd like to share, maybe a way for people to reach out to you?
Yeah, I think my handles are all Rhea Coupler, just my first name and last name. I'm pretty sure.
All right, so R-A-Y-A Coupler. So, yeah. I'll have links to that in the show notes. Yeah, great. Thanks so much for coming on. This has been, I think, way better than I even thought it was going to be, and I thought it was going to be a pretty great episode. So this has been pretty special.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been such an honor, honestly.
Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, I'll tell you, but I have to throw in something here too, that we're in our fourth year of this podcast, and I have certain episodes that I really enjoyed, but this, Rhea, is definitely in the top five. And I just want you to know that, because you are so genuine and your experience is so important. And I really, really hope that as you go through these experiences that we can get you back to talk about them with us. You can find me in the usual social media places under Sam Bradley, Sam Bradley 11, on the Facebook page. And I'm hoping that Rhea does hook up with us there, because I imagine if we ever had an episode that would generate some questions, it would be this one. And disasterpodcast.com, which is another good place for you to throw up questions and let us know. Every time I think we're running out of stuff to talk about, something wonderful comes along like this. So please give us some ideas. I would love to have more personal experiences like this, because everybody learns from them. So, you know, please join us on one of those sites and let us know what you think. Where do we find you, Jamie?
Well, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media circles out there. So look me up, friend, follow, or otherwise link to me. I'd love to hear from you. And you can always find me, of course, over at disasterpodcast.com, where we have all of our episodes posted, as well as links and methods to subscribe to the show. So you can get it by email, to an app on your mobile device, however you want to get it delivered. We can certainly arrange for that. And again, look us up, Disaster Podcast. Podcast over at Facebook. We have our own Facebook group. You just request to join the group and you're in. And we have discussions there on episodes. People ask questions. It's just a great forum for us to keep in touch on that social media channel. So please take care of that. You know, Sam, we end the show the same way every week. We have a tagline. Everybody's heard it if they've listened to the show at all. But boy, this time it just seems so appropriate.
If there was ever a perfect example of our tagline, this is certainly it. Oh my God. You know, that austere medicine, disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine. And I think Rhea has just proven that.